So thank you very much for the invitation and for the introduction. And say thank you all of you for coming so early to a colloquium talk. And so today I will speak about sphere packings, universal optimality, and Fourier interpolation. So we will start with energy optimization. So suppose that C is some finite set of points in Euclidean space. Then we fix some function P, which would be our potential function. And then we can compute the P energy of this configuration of points as the energy of their pairwise interactions. And here we assume that the energy of interaction depends only on distance between two points in every pair of points in the configuration. Also, we assume that our points, they don't interact with themselves. So only different points are interacting with each other. And also what we do, we normalize our energy. So we divide this energy by the number of points in configuration. So in a sense, this number, it would be somehow like an average energy of pairwise interaction per one point in our configuration. And now what we would like to do with this definition, we would like to go further. We would like to consider not only finite sets, but also some meaningful infinite subsets of Euclidean space. And so by meaningful, what we mean, of course, it's very difficult to give a definition which would well work for all subsets, even for all discrete subsets. So first, to what we expect from our configuration is to be nice in some regard. For example, we want our configurations to have a well-defined density. And so whenever we have some discrete subset of Euclidean space, we define its density in an obvious way. So what we do, we take a big Euclidean ball, for example, around the origin, and intersect this ball with our discrete set. Then we divide the number of points here by the volume of the ball. And so as we take the radius of a ball to be bigger and bigger and bigger, we hope that such a limit would exist. Of course, it's somehow it does not always exist, but for some nice configurations, we hope that the limit exists. And then we will call this, and again, for nice configurations, we will obtain here a finite number, which is bigger than zero and smaller than infinity. And we will call this number the density of our configuration. Also, after fixing our energy profile P, we can compute the lower P energy of any configuration C, and we do it in a similar way. So we take our configuration, we intersect it with a finite ball around zero, and then we compute the P energy of this finite configuration. And now we take ball bigger, bigger, and bigger, and hope that this limit exists as R goes to infinity. And again, it's somehow it's not given. The existence of limit is not guaranteed at all. But at least we can always take a limit infimum. And then we call this number lower P energy of a configuration C. And in some cases, the limit does exist. And then we would say that this number, it is the P energy of configuration C. And maybe I should warn you that for some important energy profiles, such limit does not exist even for very nice configurations. For example, if you want to compute the Coulomb energy of some set of points, you would have to do more tricks and more regularizations. But in our case, we will actually work with energies which decay very fast as the distance between points becomes large. And so, for example, this case will be, for today, it will be excluded from our consideration. So here are some examples of what kind of configurations are we working with? For example, one very nice and very regular discrete subset in Euclidean space are so-called are the lattices, or how sometimes they are called in physics, the Bravian lattices. So there is a bit of a difference in terminology, but for us, lattice, it will be a discrete abelian subgroup of Euclidean space. And also we expect this discrete abelian subgroup to be of full rank D. So for example, if we have an like two-dimensional space, and we take, like for example, we can take all points with where first coordinate is zero and first second coordinate is an integer, then of course this is an abelian subgroup, but it is forbidden by our definition. So all our lattices, they have to be of full rank. For example, as Z2 in R2. And so it's easy to compute the density of a lattice. So the density of a lattice, it will be just 1 over the covolume of a lattice. And also it's easy to compute the P energy, because in a lattice, all points, they are equivalent to each other with respect to some translation in a lattice. So computing average energy of a point in a lattice is the same as computing energy of only one point. And so here we can compute, of course, point zero, the origin is always an element of the lattice. So here we can just compute this P energy of origin, and then it will be equal to our P energy, of course, given that this sum converges. But in all our in our talk, actually, we will think of our function P as to be a, so if this is a distance between x and y, and this is rho of, so we will think of our rho always being some fast decaying function. So another type of configurations, which are also nice to work with, are periodic configurations. And sometimes in the literature, actually, these configurations are called the lattices. So here we fix some lattice lambda, and then we say that the configuration C is lambda periodic if it's this configuration is not changed when we shift it by any element of the lattice lambda. And so now it's also easy to compute the density of such a configuration. It will be just the number of points in this configuration modulo the action of lattice lambda divided by covolume of lattice lambda. So what we can do, we can take some fundamental domain of our lattice and see, find all the points of configuration in this fundamental domain, and then divide this number of points inside by the volume of the fundamental domain. And so now we can also compute the P energy of a periodic configuration. So now this time somehow not all the points are equivalent in the periodic configuration. However, it will be sufficient for us to compute P energies of points which are just inside of the fundamental domain, and then take the average. Because that's because every point in a periodic configuration, it will be equivalent to some point inside of a fundamental domain. And so this is a bit more symmetrical way to write down this P energy. So somehow this formula looks shorter and nicer, but here I have I cheated a little bit because when I defined my energy profile P, I never required for it to be defined, well defined at zero. But then if we do define our P in zero, actually we can do it in any way. We don't even have to make sure that it's continuous or smooth, or we can just somehow assign this value, then this will be true. And so now the problem we are considering is the following. So let C be a discrete subset of Euclidean space, and we assume that this discrete subset has well-defined density rho, and this density, it is some number strictly between zero and infinity. Also, we fix our favorite energy profile, and then we say that C minimizes P energy if this limits the P energy of C, if it does exist, and any other configuration in Euclidean space of dimension D, which has the same density rho, will have lower P energy equal at least to this number. So another way to say this, we can also, in this case, we also see that, say that C, it's a ground state for energy profile P. And so now, one naive question one can ask. So how do the ground states depend on our choice of energy profile? So it can happen that we are in this in some Euclidean space and that we fixed our density. And now we are changing our energy profiles and we want to see so how if some ground states for this energy profiles exist, how they depend on this energy profile P. And of course, it's not difficult to see that if we pose absolutely no restrictions on energy profile P, then ground states can take very unusual shapes. For example, this profile P, it could favor certain distances, and then our configurations will be forced to have these particular distances. On the other hand, we can choose some nice family of energy profiles. So for example, we can consider this the Gaussian core model. So what is the advantage of considering such an energy profile? It's that these functions, they are all first, they decay very fast, and so we will not have any convergence issues. And also somehow this type of energy profiles, they simulate the repulsive interaction between particles. So it means that whenever we have two points in configuration, or we can think of them as particles of some sort, then we know that our particles, they will always repulse each other. And as they, if they move closer together, then the force between them becomes stronger. And so here one example. So let's consider this Gaussian core model in dimension three. So we take a parameter alpha, and it will be between zero and infinity. And we consider this family of energy profiles. And also we fix the density of our configuration to be equal to one. And so it's somehow it's widely believed that when our alpha is very small, so it means that this energy decays very, very slowly, then the BCC lattice is a good configuration. So it's not a proven result, but this somehow, I think this is widely believed and confirmed by experiments or numerical experiments. On the other hand, if alpha is very big, then our problem it becomes essentially equivalent to a sphere packing problem. And for sphere packing, we know that the FCC lattice, it is a optimal solution. And also experiments suggest that if alpha is somehow finite but very big, then FCC lattice is again a winner of this game. And but if alpha is around one, then something rather unusual happens. So it turns out that we can construct a rather strange configuration, which is called somehow coexistence state, which will be better than any of these two lattices. So one thing I should say that if alpha is exactly equals to one, then BCC lattice and FCC lattice, they give equal results, because these two lattices, they are dual to each other. And somehow, from the Poisson summation formula, we will see that, this energy of P1 of BCC is the same as energy of P1 at FCC. And so the trick which we can do somehow around value one and its value one itself, it's that we can divide our three-dimensional space into two half spaces. And on one side of this space, we make our density smaller than one. And here we put our points into FCC configuration. And on the other half of our space, we make the density bigger than one. And here we put the BCC configuration. And so here this FCC configuration will be slightly better. And here the BCC configuration will be slightly better. And now an easy computation shows that indeed such a division into two phases will give us advantage over this energy here. But of course, we are very far away from solving this problem completely. So we are able to create some kind of a solution which is better than this one or any of these two solutions, but we don't. What is the optimal solution in this case? It's probably a very difficult problem, and at least mathematicians will not be able to prove it in the near future. And so we see that somehow this dependence on ground states from the energy profile can be very difficult and very strange, even when we are looking at such nice families. However, despite the somehow this example, so Henry Kohn and Abhinav Kumar, they gave the following definition. So they gave definition of universal optimality. So they say that a configuration C, which is a discrete subset in Euclidean space of dimension D with fixed and finite density rho, it is such a configuration C is universally optimal if it minimizes P energy whenever this function P, it's a completely monotonic function of squared distance. And this condition, it is actually equivalent then if it's just equivalent. To minimizing this P alpha energy for all parameters alpha. Because some of this completely monotonic functions of squared of they are all convex linear combinations of exponential functions. And so we see that from the previous slide, we see that such a universally optimal configurations, they don't exist in dimension three, for example. However, Henry Kohn and Abhinav Kumar, they conjectured that such configurations, they do exist in other dimensions, at least in some of them. And so they conjectured that the lattice of integers in dimension one, the A2 lattice, so the hexagonal lattice in dimension two, the E8 lattice in dimension eight, and the Lich lattice in dimension 24, they are universally optimal. And actually, in the same paper where Henry Kohn and Abhinav Kumar have given the definition of universal optimality, they've also proven the theorem that the lattice of integers is universally optimal, because what can be better than the lattice of integers? And somehow, despite this fact, it's probably not that surprising, is that the lattice of integers is the best configuration in one-dimensional space. So this result was unknown at that time, and the proof is also, it's not completely easy. So it's kind of an interesting proof. And so in a collaboration with Henry Kohn, Abhinav Kumar, Stephen Miller, Danilo Radchenko, we have proven that the E8 lattice in dimension 8 and the Lich lattice in dimension 24 are universally optimal. And so today I would like to speak about the proof of this theorem. And so here is our strategy of the proof. So our main tool would be the so-called linear programming. And in a few next slides, I will explain what the linear programming means in general, and in particular, how is it applied to our situation. And then is somehow the results which we need not. So linear programming is general, it's a method for obtaining bounds for combinatorial of geometric optimization problems like the energy optimization. However, in our case, we need our bounds to be sharp. And so to achieve sharp bounds, we will need to introduce a new result in Fourier interpolation. And finally, by using these two methods, we will be able to reduce the problem of universal optimality of E8 and Lich lattice to a numerical verification of a certain explicit but not very simple function on the unit square. And maybe now it's a good point to ask some questions, if you have some questions, before we start with the proof. Yes.
Is the list of that list of four lattices that they conjectured to be universally optimal, is that believed to be the complete list, or are those just thought to be examples?
I don't know. I think this universal optimality, it's a rather unusual property. So at least I would believe that these are the only examples. But of course, I can be wrong. It's just, I think we know very little about this problem in other dimensions. So at least in small dimensions, there is no good candidates for this. So probably these are the only ones. But on the other hand, it's maybe, I don't know, that I would not call a conjecture. It would be a bit irresponsible. It's just the evidence is too small. And so now let's move to the proof. So first, let's start with the linear programming bounds. So the idea of a linear programming is to replace a certain difficult optimization problem by a problem of conic optimization. And for codic optimization, first we have a very good duality theory, and also we have many, many methods for actually solving them. We have a lot of software, a lot of theoretical results. And so the such a method, it was all applied to many geometric optimization problems, like problem of finding a kissing number for spheres and finding good codes. And so here in the same paper of 2007, so Henry Kohn and Abhinav Kumar, they have adopted this method to the energy optimization in Euclidean space. And so they've proven the following. So here, let P be again our energy profile. And we suppose that we were able to construct a Schwarz function, a certain Schwarz function F, which is an auxiliary function for us. And this auxiliary function satisfies the following properties. So first, it's this function, it is smaller or equal than our function P for all points of Euclidean space without the origin. And the Fourier transform of this function is non-negative, this time for all y in the Euclidean space. And then if we are able to construct such an auxiliary function f, then we deduce that every subset in Rd with density rho has lower p energy at least rho times the value of Fourier transform of f at zero minus the value of f at zero. And so what we have done here, so we had this difficult geometric energy minimization problem, and now we have replaced it by another optimization problem of finding a Schwarz function in a certain convex set, because these both, they are convex conditions, and the number we are optimizing for, it's also a linear condition. Of course, here the price is that this function f, it's a Schwarz function, so it lies in infinitely dimensional space, which is a bit difficult, but yeah, and also, yes?
Oh, could I just interrupt for 1 second? You may have said this already, but f hat is the Fourier transform of f?
Yes, f hat is the Fourier transform of f.
And I think for this audience, it would be helpful to say what a Schwarz function is. I think that may not be common.
Okay, good. So f is a Schwarz function if... So it means that f is infinitely differentiable. And now if we take x to the power alpha and we take any derivative of f, so this is always, this goes to zero as absolute value of f goes to infinity. So it's a function which is infinitely smooth. It decays faster than any inverse polynomial. And all its derivatives, they also decay faster than any inverse polynomial. And so the Fourier transform is defined in the usual way. So this is the Fourier transform. And so now let's see how this theorem works. So why is it true? So here we'll give an idea of the proof, and I will cheat a little bit. So I will prove this theorem only for periodic configurations. But then somehow any reasonable configuration, it can be approximated by periodic configurations, because this, if we don't fix a particular lattice lambda, then this somehow the class of lambda periodic configurations is very rich and already not. So we assume that our configuration C is lambda periodic for some lattice. And so then we can write the P energy of our configuration in the following way. And so here we use the fact that F is smaller than equal than, so. P of X, the first condition on our auxiliary function, for our auxiliary function F. And so what we do here we are just rewriting the same sum in a slightly more symmetrical way. And the next step, what we do here we use the Poisson summation formula. And so now is probably the only trick in our proof is that now we would like to rewrite this double sum as an absolute value of a single sum squared. So here I have nothing is done yet. So here I have just repeated the formula from the previous slide. Okay, and here I do my trick. So I rewrite this double sum here as an absolute value of a single sum, but now it's taken to be squared. And so now what this trick gives to us, now we know that this number is guaranteed to be real and non-negative. And so knowing this, it's useful for proving inequalities. So now at this step, we use the fact that our auxiliary function had non-negative Fourier transform. And so in this bigger sum from here, from this sum over the dual of our lattice lambda, the only term which we leave is the term which corresponds to mu equals to zero. And for all other terms, we know that they're all non-negative. So we can just write an estimate like this. And so now with a little simplification, now we see that if we take mu equals to zero, then this term becomes equal to this number. And so everything what survives now is this number, which I promised you in the formulation of the theorem. So now we estimated the P energy of a periodic configuration C by this number. But in order to prove our theorem, we need to not only to prove an estimate, but we also need our estimates to be sharp, because somehow the Leech lattice and the E8 lattice, they do exist. So we'll prove some, we need to prove inequalities, a certain inequality for all configurations. But there will be cases when this inequality is actually achieved. And so now let's think a little bit about when the theorem of Kohn and Elkies can give a sharp bound. And so in the proof which I've just presented, we have seen that I was quite wasteful. And several times I, for example, threw away certain terms and so my bound can be sharp only if all these simplifications which I've made, they were actually free and I did not lose any information on that steps. And so how can this happen? So now suppose that lambda is some lattice in Euclidean space, and it's somehow because our E8 lattice and Leech lattice, they are lattices. So this justifies this assumption. And we assume that this lattice minimizes P energy for some P. And this is what we believe about E8 lattice and Leech lattice, not only for some P, but actually for whole family of Gaussian energies. And also we hope that this optimality can be proven by linear programming method of Kohn and Elkies using some Schwarz function F. And then all this can work and I will have no loss in inequalities only if the following conditions hold. So first, I need that the value of function F actually equals to the value of energy profile P at all points on the lattice, because the theorem of Kohn and Elkies, it requires only the upper bound here. If my proof will work only if the equality is achieved. Also for the Fourier transform, because at some point I neglected all the terms with Fourier transform of Y for all elements of the dual lattice except for zero. And my inequalities can be sharp only if this value of Fourier transform of F at all non-zero vectors of the dual of the lattice lambda equals to zero. And finally, all my inequalities, they have to be true up to the second order. And that's because my function F, it's not allowed to violate these two inequalities. So we'll have a picture like this. So if this is, for example, P, then my F would have to look something like this. And its Fourier transform would have to look like this. So it would have to look like this, where all these are the lenses of lattice points. And so now it turns out that actually only this information about F, so this information here, it is sufficient to recover the function F from function P. And so here is the theorem which we have proven together with Henry Kohn, Abhinav Kumar, Steven Miller, and Danilo Radchenko. So here, let D and N0 be either 8 and 1 or 24 and 2. Then we have proven that we will have a collection of radial Schwarz functions, AN, BN, AN tilde, and BN tilde, such that for every radial Schwarz function in the dimensional Euclidean space, and any point x in the dimensional Euclidean space, the value of f at point x can be reconstructed from the values of f at the square roots of even integers, derivatives of f at this point, and same information for the Fourier transform of f. And I should say that this the set, so this will be exactly the set of lenses of non-zero vectors in our lattice lambda D, where for D equals 8, it's an E8 lattice, and for D equals 24, it is a Leech lattice. And so maybe I would like to say that this type of interpolation formula, it's not alone in the world, and it seems like it fits into a bigger family of interpolation results. And so it, in a joint paper with Danilo Radchenko, we have proven an easier version of this interpolation formula. So in this formula, it's an, so it's an interpolation of second order, because here we need information about function f and about its derivative, and same information about its Fourier transform. But together with Danilo, we were able to prove such a formula where we need only the values of f and its Fourier transform. And but the price was that we have to collect this information not only at the square roots of even integers, but just the square roots of all integers. So it is twice less information per point, but twice bigger is the number of points, in a sense. And also there is a very interesting result of Bandarenko and Radchenko and Saip, where they prove certain analog of this formula for zeros of zeta function. And also it turns out that even though in our formula, these nodes of interpolation, they are very rigid, they have very strict arithmetic structure. However, this can be, they can be perturbed. And similar for, so what is important to, in order to have a formula like this is actually only the, in some sense, only the density of the nodes. And so these are results, so there is a result of Ramos and Sosa about the small perturbation of nodes. And recently, a more general result was announced by Sodin, Kulikov, and Nazarov, where they prove this kind of Fourier uniqueness and non-uniqueness results for a much wider family of nodes here without any somehow particular arithmetic structure, only the density requirements on the nodes. And so now, if we are able to compute this functions, en, bn, en tilde, and bn tilde, now we can construct our magic auxiliary function f, which will prove the universal optimality for us. So suppose that p is a completely monotonic potential function, then we know that the only possible, as Steven Miller called it, magic function f that could prove sharp bounds for E8 or for Leech lattice with this potential p would be such a function f, because only this function will match with a potential up to second degree at all root lenses of the lattice. And only for this function, its Fourier transform will vanish up to second degree again at all the vectors, all the root lenses of the dual lattice. And in case of E8 and Leech lattice, these two lattices are self-dual, so it is the same sequence of numbers. And so now we already have this only candidate for our function f. And now, in order to prove that the Leech lattice and the E8 lattice, that they minimize the P energy, what we would have to do, we would have to show the inequalities. So we have this the unique candidate, and now we have to verify that this unique candidate also satisfies the inequalities. And so now the harder and most technical part of the work is verifying these inequalities. And so in order to verify them, of course, it means that here these functions A and Bn, they have to be found in some explicit way. And it has to be so explicit that the inequalities become verifiable. And so if you, so again, as I already told you, that it's somehow, we don't have to check this for all completely monotonic functions of squared distance. We can check this condition only for all Gaussians. And then the inequalities for Gaussians will apply them also for all completely monotonic functions of squared distance. And so now maybe I still have a few minutes left. So I will explain you maybe very general the idea for finding this our magic function f in explicit way. So maybe we can, what we can do, we can look at this problem from a slightly different angle. And so now we can think of this interpolating basis AN and BN as a certain sequence we would like to find. And then we can construct such a, consider such a generating function capital F. So this function capital F, it will depend on the parameter X, which is our point in Euclidean space. And we also have a parameter tau, which will be just our formal parameter in generating series. And for this series to converge, this parameter tau, it has to be in the complex upper half plane. So we take tau in to be a complex number such that the imaginary part of this complex number is positive. And so we think of it just as a parameter in our generating series. And so now we see that the interpolation formula for the Gaussian function, so we believe that our interpolation formula, it should be true for all Schwarz functions. So in particular, it has to be true for such a Gaussian. So this time we consider a complex Gaussian with complex parameter tau here. Then it becomes equivalent to this functional equation for the generating function capital F. And so now we have this one functional equation for our function F, but also we have for this function F and function F tilde, but also secretly from this formula, we have two more functional equations for these functions. Namely, we know that this function and this one, they have to be, so to say, linear periodic functions. So the function such that their second difference has to be equal to zero. And now, fortunately, we in number theory, we have methods for solving such functional equations. Or we somehow almost have these methods and we have to only to extend it for our specific situation. And so from this functional equation, we can find this function capital F of tau X explicitly. Also, we can, if we can prove a moderate growth of F, namely if we show that as a function of a complex variable tau, F does not grow too fast, then we will be able, we are able to deduce the interpolation formula. And finally, if we take this function f and then specify our parameter tau, which was just the parameter of the upper half plane, if we specify it to the imaginary axis. So we have our tau, it lives in the upper half plane. Well, this imaginary part of tau is bigger than one here. And here we also have an imaginary axis. So if we specify our parameter tau to imaginary axis, then what we will get, and then our function capital F will actually turn into our magic function, small f, which we defined before. And then what we would have to do, we would have only to prove the inequalities for this function f. And so here there is actually, you remember at first we had actually two inequalities we needed to show that f is smaller than or equal than p and that f hat is bigger or equal than zero. But here there is a small trick, which was, as I remember, suggested by Henry Kohn. It's that instead of because of these functions, they have sort of all the symmetries. Instead of proving these two inequalities, it will be sufficient for us to prove only this inequality. And already this inequality, it will imply the universal optimality of E8 and the Leech lattice. And so, now the technical details of the proof come, where we actually somehow prove this inequality. But my time is over now, so maybe I'll leave technical details for the next talk. And maybe now I will just answer your questions. Maybe some of the questions will be about technical side of the proof.
Okay, thank you very much, Marina, for that talk. May I ask if anyone has questions? Maybe while people are thinking of their questions, I had one. So do I understand that these automorphic forms arise in the case only where P is a Gaussian, and that is that right? Did I understand that correctly? When you specialize to the case where P was a
So this is somehow So you're right. So somehow like Gaussian, it's a nice fun function. It's this. So it's all. Often actually used to construct automorphic forms, and that's because the Fourier transform acts on Gaussians in a similar way as modular groups, a group acts on the upper half plane. Yeah, so like in the more technical language, it's called the Weyl representation.
And are these in the case where P is some other function besides a Gaussian, do these magic functions end up being interesting or well-known functions as well,
So the way we use them somehow, like because there are so many Gaussians and they somehow span almost everything, so usually knowing these magic functions for Gaussians, it also means knowing it for all other functions, at least in the context of this, of the interpolation formula. Here, interpolation formula, it works for all functions, not only for Gaussians. And that's because here we can apply the linearity. And if our function is not a Gaussian, that what is not clear, somehow we will still have this second matching up to second order, but it's not clear whether the inequalities will be still preserved. And for some functions, they might be still preserved, but for For others, they might not. And well, we do expect that, of course, because this universal optimality, it cannot work for all potentials. So we certainly know that for some functions, the inequalities will be ruined.
Are there any other questions? Oh, I had one other question. Is there, so you mentioned at the beginning that the Coulomb potential is ruled out, is not included in the proof. Is there any sort of hope to extend things?
Actually, this Coulomb case, it was extended. There is a preprint by Silvia Serfati and another co-author, Petrache, I think there is a. So there is a paper of Serfati and where they derive the result for Coulomb energy from our proof for Gaussians. So in their paper, what they do normalize Coulomb energy in a certain somehow way, which has to be done, but they do it in, I think, in the usual way. And then they show that the universal optimality for these fast decaying functions, for example, for Gaussians, would also imply universal optimality already for this renormalized Coulomb energy.
Okay.
So in this case, this gives this optimality of Coulomb energy for E8 lattice and Lisch lattice, but somehow more, I think, most interesting for them case is the case of dimension two. But now it's unfortunately only a conditional result that if somebody will be able to prove the universal optimality of A2, then their paper is already ready to somehow generalize this to also Coulomb potential or other divergent potentials.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, then let's thank Marina one more time for a very nice talk.